smashed against open flesh. No room to rest. Pain consumed these raps. Shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One chance to lost his life, the other ran.
We're back with Voices from the Voices from the Front Lines, the 4 o'clock segment on KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. Earlier this month, Ashada Shakur, who a lot of people have known, who was a Black Panther, who was charged with killing a New Jersey state trooper and had escaped to Cuba and has been living there since 1984. There has been a bounty that has been raised and placed on her head by the Department of Justice for $1 million for her return from Cuba. So on the phone right now, we have Lumumba Bandele and Kali Acuño of the Hands Off Ashada campaign and the Malcolm X grassroots movement. Welcome to the show, the two of you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to kind of start off and try to set some of the context for this, because I think that the bounty on Ashada, it sits within a larger framework. So if we talk about the Cuban Five, who are folks who are basically tracking down the kind of right-wing extremists in Cuba and informing the FBI about their activities. If we talk about Luis Posado Carriles, who was accused of bombing a Cubana airliner and killing 73 people back in the 70s, was also part of the Beta Pigs invasion, who was also a CIA operative. He is actually seeking asylum at this point in the U.S. Against the order, extradition order from Venezuela, as a second one. And then I think also just in the increased kind of blockade and travel restrictions against Cuba, trying to suffocate the tourist industry. So on top of this, we have this increased bounty on Ashada. So how does that fit into the larger picture of U.S. relations against Cuba? And why don't we start out with Kali?
Well, let's go back just a little bit further. Folks should recall that earlier this year, I believe it was in February, Colin Powell took a journey to Panama, where he made a request that several folks who had been captured, convicted of trying to assassinate Fidel Castro, which Posada was one, were released as the outgoing president was leaving office. They were given the amnesty and released from prison upon his request and therefore the request of the United States government. Then, you know, two or three months later, he winds up within the United States. So, you know, on the one hand, they obviously view Posada, Bosch, and some of these other folks, and have for a long time, as strategic assets within their kind of covert operations. You know, and they plan, I believe, on using some of these assets to continue the raid, the invasion, the mercenary attacks, and ultimately, I think, the invasion of Cuba. So it's no accident. I think they've been a little bit embarrassed by how he's conducted himself within the United States after he supposedly kind of crept in the country. But they are definitely part of kind of the long-term strategy of the CIA and some of the right-wing assets that are there. You know, what the Cuban Five have been doing, what they're accused of doing anyway, is trying to break those networks and those cells in Miami and throughout the country that have, you know, made lifelong commitments of destroying the Cuban Revolution and destroying the Cuban government and launching terrorist attacks and raids and campaigns on Cuba and the Cuban people from Miami and from other places within the United States. And then the United States kind of flipped the script on them, accused them of being in the wrong for breaking up, you know, these networks, for breaking up these, you know, people who have a long committed record and have stated publicly, like Posada had, that he orchestrated some bombings which killed, you know, I think it was one European, if I'm not mistaken, one Italian tourist a couple of years ago, 1998. So there's the point I'm getting at, that there's a long-standing relationship that goes back to the 50s with these kind of these Cuban assets and, you know, support the United States government has, you know, given them and the diplomatic community to cover assets, resources to kind of continue a covert war against the Cuban Revolution.
So maybe you can also just tack onto that as why at this particular time was there an increase on Ashada's reward as opposed to 5 years ago, as opposed to what?
You want me to handle that or Lumumba?
How about you handle that and we get Lumumba on the next one?
Okay. I think the main reason they are seeking, they being the United States government under the regime of George Bush, which folks should know, you know, has its roots further back in the right-wing kind of movement. And particularly if we're looking at the Black Liberation Movement from the 1960s and 70s, a lot of these folks, a lot of the neoconservatives, a lot of the war hawks that are there have their roots in the Nixon administration. And the Nixon administration, you know, was noted for not initiating COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, the FBI, but definitely after 1969, following the order that the passage of the Black Liberation Movement was the greatest domestic threat to the United States government of, you know, basically trying to wipe it out. They have a long institutional memory. They haven't forgotten. They're still trying to settle scores, and this is definitely one of them with Asada in terms of having, you know, basically in their eyes, you know, a runaway slave that has not only escaped but continued to advocate for revolution within the United States, to continue to fight against United States imperialism, to speak out against it, to help organize against it. I think that's one of the things. But I think now, they're looking at their second term that they, you know, just stole, or however you want to look at it, part of what I think is on the agenda is eliminating and eradicating their domestic opposition. And, you know, the Black Liberation Movement is a key sector of the domestic resistance to kind of this whole imperialist agenda that Bush and the whole right-wing, you know, movement are pushing. And I think this season, this time, they said, okay, we got 3 years to set the course and kind of do some, you know, finish some jobs that we started in the 70s, continued on in the 80s with Reagan and Bush, and now we can kind of, I think they're figuring, you know, wipe that resistance out. And it's tied, I think, very connectedly to this whole thing with Posada, and I think with Cuba, because people have to, I don't know if we have enough time to get into it here. I'm trying to really speak on it real briefly because I know our time is short. But there are long-standing ties between our movements, the Cuban Liberation Movement, the Black Liberation Movement, particularly since the mid-1960s, where they've been able to, you know, lend us some critical support at different times.
I think that's also right, because I remember even going over on the Vince Ramos Brigade, the first Vince Ramos Brigade was Black Panthers and, you know, folks from that were fighting against U.S. imperialism in Vietnam, actually going to Cuba right after the revolution to you know, harvest sugar cane to help boost up the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it.
Well, hey, Lumumba, how you doing? Kali, thank you so much. This is Eric Mann, the co-host with Damon. I think one of the things we want to talk about, I thought, building on Kali's remarks, is the Black Liberation Movement is not in the same state that it was during the 60s and 70s. It's in a very, in my opinion, weak its position, as are all the progressive and left movements in the country. Asada Shakur, of course, becomes even more critical in a certain way as a symbol of what they were trying to destroy. How do we organize, like, what are the kind of demands, given that the Democrats are in on this too, of course, and you know that, given that the right wing, unfortunately, goes very deep. And I think that the concept of saying, well, you know, the Bush administration is hypocritical because it's supporting terrorists, but it's against terrorists, I don't think that really plays, because I think most white people and conservative people say, well, terrorism is good if we, you know, we're against certain terrorists and we practice terrorism against everybody else, and they get the double standard. So I don't think you can beat this by showing there's a double standard. I think we have to try to defend, you know, a black woman who was involved in armed struggle. Tell us, are you doing organizing work on this? Are there rallies? What's the movement look like? What's the struggle inside the black community to change ideas now?
Well, first of all, it should be you know, clarified that the Hands Off Asada campaign now is not a new campaign, that this is a campaign that has been in existence for some time. As we know, this is not the first attack on Asada Shakur since she has surfaced in Cuba. So there has been a very consistent and organized effort to make sure that her safety has been is being defended, that Cuba's sovereignty in the same vein is being defended as well. The work that has been happening within the Hands Off Asada campaign has been one of information dissemination, on two levels. One, reminding folks of the kind of spirit and energy that existed in our communities when she was liberated. And two, informing people of who she is, informing people of COINTELPRO, and trying to just put things in its proper context so that when folks do get information from mainstream media, they're able to understand it in the way it needs to be understood and begin to, in the same vein, I guess, pass on information to their slash our neighbors. So there's much of a grassroots kind of effort that's being pushed, as well as a media campaign, as we're clear that most of our grassroots community don't necessarily have the willingness to listen to the usual organizers. So we've been attempting to get folks through media. We released a press statement that was written by Most Deaf, which has gotten some pretty good play throughout mainstream media. So folks are now listening as to what it is, some of the issues that people are saying in defense of Sister Sada.
The Most Deaf I read, it was excellent, and even I'm sort of embarrassed to say that even some of the facts that he said are incontrovertible were facts that I should have known as well, but have either known or forgotten. So
right.
I think the idea of her hands being up, the bullet through the clavicle, the nerve damage, the absence of powder burns, et cetera, unfortunately, we have to make that case. But even for somebody like myself, it was good to make the case again. Very effective. Is there any support within the Congressional Black Caucus? Is there any support within the Black Church? Why don't you tell us something about that?
Well, there's relative, you know, support, and again, that could mean different things depending on who you're talking to and the time of year you're talking to them. So, I mean, folks have expressed interest in wanting to have conversations, but there has not been the kind of support where people are being verbally explicit as to what it is our communities are demanding. There has been some historical support from folks like Maxine Waters, Cynthia McKinney, the usual progressive folks. Outside of that, there hasn't been much. There are a focal point of our organizing. We are asking people to make sure that they address their Congress folks, their U.S. senators, to express that they have an interest in making sure Sister Sada is defended and making sure that they are representing their interests in the state capital, state and national capital.
And isn't Charles Barron doing some things out there in New York?
Well, locally, yes. Charles Barron has always been, you know, on the forefront of issues like this. And it's important to know that, unfortunately, the forces that are around the table in the Hands Off the Sada campaign are not strangers. We've been around the table on numerous occasions for numerous different reasons. In fact, we were the same people who were around the table when Jamil Alameen was arrested and framed. We were the same folks around the table when Kamal Siddiqui was arrested and framed. The same folks around the table for the parole campaigns of the New York Three, of the Queens Two. So part of what Brother Khalid was talking about is this is really a continuation of unfinished business that the Nixon administration and folks who are left over from that now who have life and energy within the Bush administration are trying to clean up. There's clearly a level of embarrassment with Sister Sada, and they're taking it out on folks like Kamal Siddiqui, who folks may remember is the father of Sister Sada's daughter, who was arrested about 3.5 years ago, framed on some charges, and now serving a life sentence in an Atlanta jail for a murder that happened in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of old cases that are being dug up within the past 3 to 4 years that are very much in line with COINTELPRO and where it left off.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Khalid, I had a question for you. Eric just mentioned about the opinion that Most Deaf put out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we open up the show with a song that Common did, which is basically about Asada, about how she got shot, about how, you know, they stepped on her IVs when she was in the hospital, etc. Part of that, I think, comes out of kind of the repoliticization that's kind of trying to start happening within the hip hop community. So if you look at Black August, if you look at the hip hop summit that happened last year, two pretty big, you know, names in terms of Common and Mos Def are actually taking stands on this. How has there been any other, like, how have you actually tried to move that into actually getting more support for the campaign in the Black community?
It's the movement was missing. I mean, particularly I think with the generation that's been so saturated by, you know, mainstream media, MTV, BET, the reality is they reach certain a number of folks that, through our grassroots efforts, we don't reach. That's the current reality. And really trying to appeal, like here in the West Coast, in Oakland, on folks like, Booch from the Cool, the Hieroglyphics, some other local acts to really come out and support us at the rallies and the activities and engage in the educational, campaign and activities that we're doing, I think is a critical piece in being able to put their name out there and saying, okay, these are some people who are also supporting this issue. It helps us to reach, you know, some of the youth that we normally wouldn't reach with just things that they just see as kind of, you know, obviously openly political. So it plays a very critical role of reaching certain people, of really to tap into, you know, some of the more conscious hip-hop artists. But the other part of that is really, I think, what we're going to try and focus on is trying to politicize some of those artists, at least on the local level.
It's actually also about a moving campaign. Artists too, right?
Yeah, try through this campaign, you know, because a lot of folks will resonate with Asada simply because of the last name Shakur. And a lot of people know her,
she's the godmother of who?
Yeah, it's Tupac, right? And so, you know, we're going to definitely use that hook to try and reach people and do some deeper education and bring them into the movement at a more active level.
It's important to recognize also that there's a difference between folks who are verbally coming out and supporting her and folks who are concerned about their verbal support.
Right.
We've had very, very clear conversations with a lot of folks on the celebrity level who do support her. I mean, who are clear about the politics behind it, who are clear about the context of it in which everything occurred, and are clear about the human rights issues that are implied in all of this. But their profession, their lives really prohibit them from coming out and verbally saying what it is they would really like to say. So our struggle now is trying to get folks to the point where they're able to recognize a real level of support that they will not be alone if they step out and make a statement of support, but also trying to get them to have the Paul Robeson courage to go ahead and make a real conscious statement and not be the usual folks. You know, everybody expects Dead Prez to make a statement. Everybody expects, you know, Common to make a statement, Talib to make a statement, but we're trying to get other folks out of those typical circles who really do feel that way.
So you guys are going after 50 Cent, right?
Well, you know, we're not excluding him either. You know, James Bond could do it in the 60s, you know, hell.
Right.
Everybody's game, man. Right.
So why don't you guys give us some contact information so people can get some more information about the campaign?
Sure. In the New York area, folks can contact the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement at 718-254-8800, 718-254-8800. And there will be a launching of the Hands Off Asada campaign website within the next few weeks, and that will be www.handsoffasada.com.
And on the West Coast in Oakland, you can contact the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement at 510-433-0115. Again, 510-433-0115 or 510-220-1100.
And I need to say before we log off that we have been organizing internationally, and there is a call for an international day of action in support of
which is the 17th of July, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we're asking folks in their respective areas to get creative with some kind of support. If it's a block party, do that. If it's having an event at your church, please do that. If it's having an event in your building, on your college campus, wherever it may be, we're asking folks to do some very grassroots level but a very clear level of support of activity for Asada Shakur.
And just real briefly, like to build on that. I know you guys time is short. On Friday, June 3rd, and Saturday, June 4th, we're doing some activities here in Oakland, California. We're doing the demo on Friday, June 3rd, at the Oakland Federal Building, and we're doing an educational program on Saturday, June 4th, and we're also beginning to disseminate some petitions that we're trying to encourage everybody in the community to sign so we can take to the congressional people and, you know, bring this case home.
All right, so we had Lumumba Mandali and Kali Akuno on the phone talking about the Hands Off Asada campaign. We'll be right back with Voices from the Frontlines.